international finance workshop exercise, we want to try to consider the use and application of a number of the key legal rights and protections that we have been considering and see how these might operate in a typical type of financial transaction in practice. I've provided two examples. One is based on our loan structure. The other is based on our bond financing set of relationships. Let's just work through these and try to illustrate some of the key points which might come up in practice. A large Greek shipping company specializing in crude oil transportation wishes to purchase a number of new vessels for its fleet. Part of the funds will also be used for general working capital purposes. The company is looking to borrow $60 million over 10 years to be allocated $50 million for fleet expansion, $10 million to working capital. These figures actually seem very low in practice. The company has previously obtained funds through local Greek banks or other financial groups, although it now wishes to use the London markets to obtain the best rates available. So this is a euro-dollar deal. We're doing dollars in London to help benefit our Greek shipping company. If we see the reference to Greek shipping companies, very often we can automatically think of the famous or infamous Springwell decision, which considered a lot of the issues which are going to arise in this particular case. The company approaches Morgan Bank, which is a subsidiary of a major US investment house operating in London. Morgan Bank recommends that the company consider borrowing under a syndicated euro-dollar facility in light of the specialist nature of the funding required and the possible lack of investor interest in Eurobond markets in light of recent losses suffered in shipping industry as a result of the global financial crisis. Again, if this is recent geopolitical risk, it's possibly more difficult to enter, to use the capital markets, so we may have to go loan markets. We have to go back to syndicated lending. The company issues a mandate letter. The bank approaches four other banks, so we have a five-bank syndicate. The basic term sheet is agreed, information memorandum produced, and the draft syndicated loan agreement is entered into. And it's a single currency, not a multi-currency. Due to a clerical error, Morgan Bank's standard liability disclaimers are not incorporated into either the information memorandum or the facility agreement, although that's the loan agreement. These include a no-duty clause, which is a no-basis clause, a no-confirmation or no-accuracy clause, a no-assessment clause. These are all forms of basis. No inducement. And then a separate no-fiduciary duty clause. The provisions have also included an exclusion of liability for innocent, negligent, and fraudulent misrepresentation, criminal liability, and statutory duty, as well as that a standard indemnity clause also included, but in this case that was omitted. And this would have covered any loss or any cost arising as a result of any of the foregoing. The facility agreement is duly signed, and the shipping company draws down the full amount under the initial three-month commitment period. So it had a three-month, it's a short commitment, only 3 months, but it's drawn down the full amount because it wasn't that large an amount in the first case. Unfortunately, trading conditions are difficult in light of the continued global recession. One of the company's crude oil tankers is also involved with a collision with another ship off the Californian coast, and the US government is threatening to sue the company for the commercial and environmental damage and cleanup costs involved. This could be very substantial. There's no litigation, but it's threatened or contemplated, and those are different words. We need to check that. That will be referred to in the documentation. Threatened, considered, imminent, possible, contingent, all of this. We need to look at the language to see which ones of those require us to act and which ones don't. The information memorandum had separately expressly stated that the company's existing fleet of ships was seaworthy and that no litigation was imminent. So it's two separate points. It's the quality, the seaworthiness, and the litigation. Although this was confirmed that there was a previous collision with another ship and there may be other difficulties with the seaworthiness of the fleet as a whole. The company subsequently defaults on its next interest payment, and each of the syndicate member banks become very concerned with its continued ability to pay and with its solvency. Morgan Bank has already transferred its lending commitments under the facility to Singapore Bank. You're asked to advise on the following issues. So, explain the nature of the liability of each of the syndicate members to each other to provide funds under the facility during the initial commitment period and extending it if there is a subsequent default. So What's the basic initial position? The basic initial position is from our table, from our summaries, and from the chapter provided, the banks are several. Their liability is several, their responsibility is several. It's not joint and several. If one of the banks doesn't lend the full amount, the other banks do not have to make up the shortfall. If this occurs before the facility documentation is entered into, before the loan agreement is signed, the lead bank will find another bank, it will bring in somebody else, the lead bank. If this occurs after there's been drawdown, after the loan agreement comes into effect, the lead bank will have left, departed, therefore the agent bank will find another substitute bank to bring in. But the banks themselves are under no obligation to cover any shortfall. Their proportionate liability will be specified in the schedule, usually Schedule 1, in accordance with their commitments. So, explain the nature of the liability of each of the original syndicate members to provide funds. Now, if you wanted to expand that, you go back to your standard documentation that we've been referring to. For example, in Section 2, Section 2.1 and Section 2.2, it's specified there that this is a several set of relationships. However, the rights and obligations are separate and independent, and each of the borrow and each of the banks, the syndicate members, can sue separately. So again, if you wanted a real, very good, high quality answer, you build all of this in. You refer to all of these articles and sections and you build in as much material as you can. You expand the answer around the initial key point, which you have already dealt with. Point two, explain the legal effect of the transfer of interest by Morgan Bank. This constitutes, in this particular case, it will be a novation because we're actually bringing another bank to assume the lending obligations of the first bank. That cannot be an assignment by itself because that only transfers rights and entitlements and benefits. It doesn't transfer obligations. We will then have a novation. This is provided for under Schedule 5 of the Standard Commitment Facility documentation that we have been looking at. However, you could refer to other different types of transfer, legal assignment, equitable assignment, novation, participation, sub-participation, risk participation. If you wanted to impress your examiner, you mention everything. In this specific case, this would have been a novation. It's probably already provided for in the documentation. There will have been a schedule attached. So even before the loan agreement's entered into, the arranging bank has used the schedule to bring in another bank. So this is very often, this happens very, it's very common in practice. The arranging bank only wants the large arranging fee. It doesn't actually want the lending fees or the commitment fee, which is paid by the borrower under the facility. So therefore, it will transfer on its obligations so it can move on and set up the next facility and then charge the full arranging fee in connection with that. In terms of changing parties, changes of lenders is dealt with under Loan Market Association, standard documentation we've been referring to, section 24, 24.1 to 7, and then changes to obligors is in section 25.1 to 7. Again, if you have space and you have time, maximum answer, add as much as possible, build it all up. What you're trying to do is maximum detail with as few words that you can write down in as succinct and direct a manner as possible. You're answering the specific point raised as well as building up any additional information you can around that. Point three, outline any potential heads of liability which Morgan Bank or Singapore Bank may be sued. So that's the lead bank and the arranging bank. So all of the heads of liability are dealt with in the papers that I gave you. Essentially what we've got is common law misrepresentation, statutory misrepresentation and deceit, agency liability, fiduciary liability, regulatory liability. In this particular case, what we're looking at is misrepresentation. So again, we go back and we focus. What were the two key issues which came up? It was the seaworthiness and it was the litigation. We immediately think about our representations and warranties. Statements of warranty, statements of representation that's provided for in No Misleading Statements is LMA 1910. And then the no proceedings, pending or threatened, that is 1913. So we immediately need to confirm the specific terms of this to see how wide it goes. It doesn't say litigation commenced. It will say threatened or contemplated or whatever. We need to check the specific language. If we have to disclose, we had to disclose. And if we did not, there's potential liability there. Because if there's a misrepresentation, we can then tie that in directly to the events of default. And we will see that the default clause is in misrepresentation 23.4. Do you see what we're doing? We're looking for the connections between all the different provisions, between all the different sections. So, 19.10, no misleading information. 19.13, no misleading pending, no litigation, pending or threatened. And then again, we've got misrepresentation as a default in 23.4. We've got other obligations breached in 23.3. We just need to consider the possible implications of all of this. We should have made full disclosure. If disclosure wasn't made, this is potentially a misrepresentation. And again, then we could think about who could we sue in that respect. Could we go against the lead bank? Could we go against the agent bank? And then we'll come back and look at all of this in further detail as the questions expand. So outline the potential heads of liabilities, point three. Point four, explain the effect of the failure to include the standard disclaimers. They failed to include them. That was their omission. Therefore, they have no legal effect whatsoever. That's the answer. But what we then do is we want to expand that. The question actually does this for you. Explain, next point, the extent to which the disclaimers may otherwise have protected Morgan Bank. So you can explain them in point four, and then you comment on the extent to which they could actually have had the full effect that Morgan Bank expected. It's point five. What is that indicating? What is that concerned with? Basically, we know that the exclusion clauses are fully valid, full legal effect. And there's all the case law on that, photo productions and all of the common English decision taking that would usually apply in these cases. However, what we've also got is this additional issue of scope of exclusion. The exclusion clauses refer to fraudulent misrepresentation, criminal liability, and statutory duty. Now, we know from the separate materials I've provided for you, you cannot exclude for these. You cannot exclude for fraud or fraudulent misrepresentation, criminal liability, statutory duty or statutory liability, where the clause is misrepresented or where there was a separate oral warranty. In any of these cases, the clause is of no effect. So therefore, you'll explain, even if those have been implemented, those specific provisions are of no legal effect in any case. However, even if they don't apply, and if the lead bank or the arranging bank had to make payment, what do we still have? The indemnity. So even if nothing else operates, you can still recover any payments you've made under the indemnity, so long as that's legal, applicable, and relevant. It doesn't say guarantee. All of the co-borrowers, supporting borrowers, they will all have been co-guarantors for each other. What's the difference between a guarantee and an indemnity? A guarantee is dependent on a separate underlying payment obligation. The guarantee is conditional on non-payment of a tied obligation to make payment. Where that tied obligation to make payment is discharged or is otherwise unenforceable for any reason, the guarantee falls. The guarantee is conditional on the separate payment obligation. And indemnity is much wider. It covers any loss, any cover that has to be paid in the event of any funds being lost by another party. So an indemnity is much wider than a guarantee. A guarantee is tied to a specific payment obligation, which if the payment obligation falls, the guarantee falls. An indemnity is a much wider payment obligation to cover any losses which may otherwise be suffered or incurred in a particular case. Then the last point, outline any potential liability of the agent bank under the facility. Agent bank, we immediately think of the core provisions that apply in the standard facility document that we've been looking at. That's Article 26. So you're straight into Article 26. Who appoints the agent bank? All of the banks collectively come together and appoint the agent bank. So effectively, the agent bank's appointed by each bank, five in this case, but to be governed under the single terms and conditions of the loan agreement. All of the other key provisions are then expanded in 26, including specifically the immunity clause, which is, can you remember? 26.9. And the specific language we've been looking at is that there has to be gross negligence or willful default. So only in the event of gross negligence or willful default can the agent bank be held liable. We have an express exclusion for fiduciary duties, and then all of the other provisions are dealt with in 26. And for a very good answer, you just expand them as far as you can in the answer that you're providing. I've then made available a separate fact pattern, a separate problem situation. This time it's a bond deal, bond market. So let's look at this as well. A large hotel group specialising in corporate and luxury bespoke holiday facilities wishes to construct a new 120-tower hotel in Shanghai. This is in Pudong, Shanghai. We already have the Jianmin Tower, we have the Park Hyatt, and we also have the Shanghai Tower. Three enormous hotel towers right beside each other in Shanghai. The first 49 floors will be used for office rental purposes and the rest for a hotel with the reception on the 50th floor. The hotel is to be called Shanghai 50. I actually wrote this before the Shanghai Tower was built, so they called it the Shanghai Tower. I said the Shanghai 50. I thought that was good because the reception's on the 50th floor. It could have been the Shanghai 64 or whatever. But I've been there. The observation gallery is astonishing. It's like 100 floors up. It's amazing. It's astonishing. The company is looking to borrow $110 million over 20 years, with $100 million for construction purposes and the rest for working capital. The company has previously obtained funds through East Coast US banks or other financial groups, although it now wishes to use the London markets and to attract the best rates available, so we're going to be looking at bond markets. The company approaches Merrill Lynch or Merrill Bank, which advises that the cheapest facilities would be available through a multiple option facility, a MOF, consisting of a combination of a medium-term note program, an TNP, and a shorter commercial paper with a swing line facility. Merrill Bank recommends trying to obtain $100 million under the medium-term note program and then $10 million through the commercial paper program for continuing working capital purposes. After it obtains the mandate, Merrill Bank approaches four other banks to act as co-managers and co-dealers under the program agreement. Merrill Bank prepares the draft offering circular and subscription agreement, trustee agreement, and a fiscal agency agreement. The notes and paper are to be issued in an electronic form and a no global with a global note or paper. Now, it's quite a small facility, $110 million. Will that have a trustee? I'm not sure. But in the example given, we're to assume there's a trustee. It all depends upon what the target investors are. If it's a small group selling to professional investors, you will not need a trustee in these cases. If it's a small, what we call a club deal, if it's a subscription whereby we just sell on to existing clients of the large investment firms involved, investment banks involved, they will have a whole list of institutional investors that they commonly, regularly place funds with. In these cases, you don't have a public offer, a public listing. It's only a bought deal. Because it's a private sale, you will benefit from exemptions under sales restrictions under most domestic securities laws. If it's only to a limited group of professional investors or an unlimited group of high quality professional investors, these are all exempt. So the reference to a trust deed is maybe a little misleading in this case. This doesn't look like it's going to be a big public offer. So therefore, you won't have a trustee and you won't need a trustee. Merrill Bank decides to place its allocation of the bonds and paper with one of the investment trusts managed on behalf of a wealthy Asian country as part of its global sovereign wealth fund portfolio, which is looking for a high but safe return. The sales department had a continuing relationship with Merrill Bank, with the trust for a number of years, and with the trust purchasing a large number of securities through them. Exactly what I've just said. Merrill Bank's standard facility disclaimers are duly incorporated into the standard documentation used. These include a no duty clause, a no confirmation of accuracy clause, an own credit assessment clause, a no inducement clause, and a no fiduciary duty clause. The provisions include an exclusion of liability for all innocent, negligent, and fraudulent misrepresentation, criminal liability, and statutory duty, as well as a full indemnity clause, in Merrill Bank's favour in the event of any cost or loss arising as a result of any of the foregoing. The notes and bonds are duly issued and the hotel group receives the full amount issued on closing. Unfortunately, trading conditions are difficult in light of the continued global recession. One of the group's other hotels also suffers damage as a result of a hurricane in Florida, and the US government is threatening to sue the parent company for faulty construction by failing to incorporate necessary safety measures. The offering circular had expressly stated that the group's hotel portfolio were all built to the highest of standards, so again, it's a quality issue. Although it had become immediately clear following the hurricane that many shortcuts had been taken in construction for money savings purposes. The parent company subsequently defaults on its next interest payment, and the investment trust managers acting on behalf of the trust are very concerned, and they're wondering, taking legal advice on the possible recovery. You are asked to advise on the following. Outline the main documents that would have been signed to allow the shipping company to obtain its initial 100 million. So it's a typical standard euro dollar deal. We just go through all of the various documentation that would be required. Those would have included the subscription agreement, the prospectus or offering circular with the initial mandate letter. We mention a trust deed, although that may or may not have been necessary. If there is a trust deed, we only have a paying agency agreement. If there's no trust deed, we need a fiscal agency agreement, because you have to create a trust, a fiduciary relationship over the funds held in the accounts on behalf of the bondholders. If there's a trust deed, it's only a paying agent. If there's no trust deed, it's a fiscal agency agreement. There's no mention of selling groups, there's no mention of underwriting, so we can assume that doesn't apply in this case. Those are the main documents, and all you would simply do is review those and explain each of those and the content. And then build that into a larger explanation of the establishment and the procedure involved. That's what I would do. It doesn't ask me to do that, but in this case, I would explain the procedure would have included the following, and then build all the documents into that. Point two, explain the main heads of liability under which the lead bank may be sued in the event that the parent company or hotel group failed to make payments either under the notes or the commercial paper. Now, again, this only wants us to focus on the liability in the event of default in this particular case. It says heads of liability, so I'm going to write all five. Common law misrepresentation, statutory misrepresentation and deceit, statutory deceit under Section 19 of the Theft Act, 1968, as well as misrepresentation under Section 2 of the Misrepresentation Act, 1967. Agency liability, fiduciary liability, regulatory liability. Then I'm going to move on and deal with the specific point that the question is focusing on. What we're looking in particular is misrepresentation. So in this case, what have we got? Again, there's a quality fault issue, and then there's the litigation issue. So immediately, I'm going to think about no misleading information, 1910, LMA, as well as proceedings and protection, 1913. I'll just review to see if there's any other provisions. What about a no default? If there's a breach and a cross default, that could create a default. Strictly speaking, that means no prior default to the drawdown. Although you're just looking for additional provisions you could cross refer to, you could try to build in. In this case, it's basically common law misrepresentation, innocent, negligent, or fraudulent, as well as you've got the misstatements and you've got the failure to disclose. So that's the potential heads of liability. It then says, what are the main defences that may be available against the investment trust? Now, in this particular case, it's going to use its traditional, its basic disclosures, exemptions, the various protections it would normally otherwise have applied and relied on. It's going to basically refer to the no basis clauses. It's going to basically try and transfer responsibility back for making an independent credit assessment and risk assessment onto the investment trust. We gave you no advice. We gave you no advisory. There was no advisory relationship. A lot of this is referred to in the Springwell decision we've mentioned before. because this includes no basis type elements, you can build in the additional case law around that as well. I provided notes about all of the case law which applies, including the recent extensions and changes in that on the system. There's a lot you could discuss just in terms of the lead bank ensuring that it's getting no liability outside its immediate responsibility under the setting the relationships up. But even then, we know, for example, in the LME, there's a specific clause which says that under the LME itself and the LME document, that the lead bank has no express duties and liabilities of any responsibilities. That's section 26.2. It's actually provided there is no duty or responsibility. This is slightly different because the investment trust wasn't a party to that, but we could sort of cross-refer to that by way of example. Strictly speaking, the LME doesn't apply, but there will be equivalent clauses and provisions, so we can use them by extension. The key point in this case is the misrepresentation. It then asks, what is the effect of the disclaimers and exclusions included? Well, the exclusions are going to full effect, photo productions and all of the other case law in that area. However, we cannot exclude fraudulent misrepresentation, criminal liability, and statutory duty. So those are of no effect. But even then, if there was liability, we have the indemnity clause. 5. Confirm the extent to which either the agent bank or trustee may be under any separate liability following default on the bonds of the paper. And again, we'll mention the equivalent provisions. There basically would have been no duty, there will have been no liability, there will be no assumption of any responsibility, essential, no duty, no basis clauses, so that nobody else can sue them because they had no duty to anybody else. And then again, they'll rely on the misrepresentations, they'll basically go back to their exclusion clauses. The only relevant issue that might have to be considered is whether this is reasonable in the circumstances. So we're going to import the Unfair Contract Terms Act, the reasonableness test. That's also specifically incorporated into misrepresentation situations where you have statutory misrepresentation under the Misrepresentation Act 1967. Again, you reapply the reasonableness test in that case. So was this reasonable or unreasonable in this particular case? It looks like it would be perfectly reasonable. So therefore, that would not undermine the effectiveness of the exclusion clauses. Even if there was liability, we still have the indemnity protection as well. Again, you simply build up the answer as far as you can. In this case, you can't strictly refer to the LME directly because it's a loan deal rather than a bond deal. You'll mention all of the separate documents as we've done already, but also build in the case law. So all of the principal and primary case law that we have referred to before, all of this becomes very useful and relevant in this particular case. Springwell, DPAC, PK, all of these cases. The more you can build in, the higher quality an answer you will provide.